and welcome to Proverbial Perspective. I'm Shahid Ahmed, and we have a very, very interesting program for you today. So today, our topic will be the presumption of guilt. And obviously, this is a play on words because our system of government presumes a man or woman is innocent until proven guilty. Well, my guest today can shed some light on what it feels like to be presumed guilty before even going to trial. Joining me today to talk about his ordeal with the highest level of the criminal justice system is Brandon Mayfield, the Portland attorney recently released following an apology by the Federal Bureau of Investigation implicating him to the terrorist bombing which occurred recently in Spain. Brandon Mayfield is an attorney and also a Muslim convert, and I will be talking with him while inviting your input and your participation here at 503-231-8032 at KBOO Community Radio. So please call with your questions or comments for Brandon Mayfield. We'll be right with you. Let me correct myself. That was 231-8187 would be the appropriate number. And let me take this opportunity now to welcome my guest, Brandon Mayfield, with the greetings and his lovely wife, who's here with him, Mona, with the greetings of Assalamu Alaikum.
Alaikum Assalam.
I'm glad you both could join me today for this program, and we certainly hope that many people gain from this program in terms of your experiences and the experiences of your family. Brandon, let me begin by stating you're an attorney. You have served your country honorably as an officer in the military. Give us your reaction when you first learned that you were suspected of being involved in the catastrophe, I could say, in Spain. The terror attacks that occurred in Spain recently. What was your first reaction?
Actually, before I start, I wanted to say thanks for inviting me to KBOO Radio Station to do this talk show. I was a volunteer years ago here. I don't even know how long it's been, maybe 1991, when I was going to Portland State University. So heartfelt thank you for inviting me here. I believe in public radio.
Thank you for coming. I think we took a class together in Portland State, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think it was an Egyptian Arabic class, and my wife is from Egypt, grew up here.
Little did we know we'd be sitting here on the other side of the microphones now, talking about this. But thank you so much for coming.
But to answer your question, how did I feel when I knew I was implicated? I won't say implicated. I mean, to share with the listeners out there, I was arrested as a material witness. And yes, it was in connection with the Madrid, Spain bombing. And initially, when I was arrested, I don't think I realized immediately that that was what I was being arrested in connection with, even though I had an opportunity to look at the affidavit in support of the search warrant and the arrest warrant, but I was kind of getting to the bottom line, who authorized this and why is it happening? I didn't know immediately, but when at that point, and I can't say exactly when, I did realize that it was pretty shocking. It was pretty surprising.
What were the circumstances of your arrest? I know I understand that the media was present, and that kind of conjures up, in my mind, similar circumstances when Sheikh Mohammed Rahman Turiye was arrested. What were the circumstances, and where did they arrest you?
I have a law office in Southwest Portland, or in the West Slope area, and that's where I was arrested. It was approximately 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm just guessing, on May 6th, had a knock on the door, had two FBI agents, I believe, identify themselves as FBI agents, asked to come in, ask a few questions, and at that point, I indicated that this is a law office, there is confidential files here, and that they really didn't have any business being there. I didn't want them to come in. But at the same time, I said, if you have questions for me, you can put them to me in writing, and I'll, I'd be happy to review them and, possibly get back with you.
Did you have any indication or did they give you any prior indication that they wanted to talk with you or that you perhaps will be asked to answer questions?
Well, they did ask, they said that they wanted to talk to me.
Prior to that date?
Yeah, prior to that date, I never had any call from the FBI, to me personally. I'm a Muslim and I attend a mosque in Beaverton, Oregon, and I had other Muslims approach me because they knew I was an attorney and say, the FBI has questioned us, what do we do? And I'm not a criminal defense attorney, so I didn't have all the answers, but I had attended a lecture before from Stanley Cohen. He's a criminal defense attorney from New York who I think he represented one of the Portland Seven, I believe.
Well, he represented Sheikh Mohammed Abdul.
Did he? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And during those lectures, he would give what I call the just say no to the FBI speeches. You may have attended some of those lectures.
Yes, I did.
And so I took some of his advice when I was approached by the FBI on that day. And even before that, I'd given that advice to other Muslims. And so I knew that we were being profiled in some sense. When I say we, I mean, Portland Muslims, in some sense, were being questioned by the FBI. So it wasn't a surprise to me that the FBI were at my door and asked me a question, but it was a big surprise when I learned that it was in connection with this Madrid, Spain bombing. It was just outrageous or unbelievable to me.
Mm-hmm. You were quoted as saying the implications of your arrest made the Newsweek magazine, I believe, or Time magazine, one of those, just recently, and I was reading an article. And you said you were quoted as saying the implications of your arrest was a death sentence. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm being arrested as a material witness. And why to ask questions. I assume, I was subpoenaed also to attend a grand jury proceeding on June 1st, at the same time I was arrested. And the reason why a grand jury convenes is to do an investigation to determine if there's probable cause or reason to indict somebody. And in this sense, because the affidavit had said that they had allegedly found my fingerprint on a bag in a van near the site of the Madrid, Spain bombing, that presumably they were looking at me as a potential defendant. I mean, you have to assume that. In other cases, you might be asked to answer questions as a material witness regarding other potential defendants. But I think it was pretty obvious that if what they were saying was true, or if they believed it to be true, that my fingerprint was on the bag, that they must have been considering me as a potential defendant. And so that was the track I was heading down. At some point they would have to, I presume, make a decision if they wanted to indict me based on the information they have and these representations they've made in the affidavit, that is, that this is my fingerprint. And of course, these are pretty horrendous crimes. And holding a death sentence—that is, capital punishment—ultimately could be one of the implications. That's what I was referring to. That was the track that we were on.
Mm-hmm. Many of us saw members of your family during this, as you mentioned, this horrifying ordeal, and we saw them supporting you, your mother and your brother, but most of all, your lovely wife Mona and your children. Perhaps, Mona, you could maybe step to the microphone just for a minute and say, if you could describe this ordeal from your perspective, from the very beginning when he was arrested, what were your feelings, what were going through your mind, how were the children reacting, all those sorts of things?
It was really unbelievable at first, when I heard of these ridiculous allegations. It was unbelievable, and then my children and I, of course, we felt despair. I knew, and my children knew, everyone knew that Brandon was innocent, and I knew that the truth would come out. However, I did not know how long it would take for that truth to come out, and that's what concerned me the most about this whole situation. My children suffered a great deal through this ordeal, and they weren't going to school. They didn't want to eat. They didn't want to drink. They were completely devastated, cried a lot, and just prayed for their father to come back home. And I tried to explain to them, to comfort them the best I could. And it was surreal. That's the only way I can describe it. It was like being in a nightmare. I remember, I believe he was arrested on Friday, and I remember I didn't sleep, Thursday, I didn't sleep that entire night, myself or the children. My small children were scared. The two small ones were terrified, so they actually slept with me. And I remember not sleeping at all night, just laying there in bed, and all these thoughts were going through my head, And I remember as soon as it turned 4 o'clock in the morning, I remember looking at the clock and thinking, today is my first day of hell. That was my immediate thought.
I think most of us in the Portland Muslim community, myself being Muslim as well, I think most of my audience know that, also just said that this is ridiculous, that most of us who've known Brandon over the years and known the type of gentleman he is and the type of man he is, automatically thought that this is crazy. This absolutely was without basis. I think many of us would have just staked our lives on it. I mean, that's how much we've known him over the years and how he carries himself and how helpful he is and so forth. But I guess when many of us thought about the family aspect, we were wondering because I think there were some maybe death threats. I don't know if there were any death threats. There was some concern on our part that they may have been. And also, we were wondering, what kind of support did you get from your neighbors? I mean, did you get some solid support, or how did Portland treat you during this time?
I think they treated me fabulous, actually. I remember that Friday morning when the first call I got was from the school, that morning. Actually, that Thursday evening, I got a call from a friend of mine who lives in town. And he had heard it on the radio, like a couple of hours after it had happened. And everyone was very supportive. I mean, the schools called me immediately in the morning, said, don't worry about the children. They don't have to come in today if they don't want to. And if they do, we'll secure perimeters for them where the media couldn't get to them and, they'd be protected. In fact, I had a woman come to the door. I didn't see her. I never met her. She left me a card. And her name is Heather. Thank you, Heather. I don't know her last name, but she had left me a wonderful card, a small box of strawberries and a flower, and indicated that, she was a Christian sister, is what she called herself, and that she was praying for us, and that she was very sorry as what had happened to the family. I actually got tremendous support, and it was surprising, and it was touching. And I thank the community for that. The Washington Police Department, the Washington County sheriff's department. They surveyed my house. They kept us safe. They actually knocked on the door and made sure we're okay, which was actually wonderful. So I had good support. My neighbors next door, elderly couple, they would stop by every other day to see how we're doing and ask if we needed anything. I had people dropping off food. I didn't shop the whole entire time. Just coming by, dropping off food, just picking up on us. And I got tremendous support. I'm thankful to all those who helped me through this time.
That's great. Brandon, if these agencies, the FBI and the Justice Department, did think one of us Muslims were involved in some sort of activity, what would be appropriate or will we be subjected to similar treatment as you receive based on the laws that were used to arrest you?
I think it depends on who it is that the government or FBI is focusing in on. There's a difference between an immigrant and a citizen. A citizen has more rights than an immigrant, and so a lot of Muslims in the local community across America, they could be treated a little bit differently, and they might be arrested or detained for some kind of a immigration violation, and so it gives the government a lot more authority or leeway to. I mean, for example, for an immigrant, they could the government could hold a closed hearing. I think that I'm not an expert on the Patriot Act. I'm not a civil law attorney, constitutional law attorney, but I do know a little bit about those provisions, and I believe it's the Patriot Act that allows closed hearings to be held for these type of detainees, and also I think it allows the government to label somebody as a
material witness, as it did you.
Not a material witness, but an enemy combatant. I mean, to use this Jose Padilla, I mean, just as an example, they arrested him on the material witness statute. First, as a material witness, didn't charge him with anything. Maybe they had nothing to charge him with, and so they changed his characterization, not as a material witness, but as a enemy combatant. And I think he's been, you know, held to this. To this date, although Padilla, I think he's a U.S. citizen, so he's in a,
yes,
he's in
he
a
is.
Different basket
yes.
than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, I mean, this is an option that they have, and so it's. I'm critical of the Patriot Act. I was before I was arrested, and it's a little bit ironic that I was. Although the material witness statute has been around longer than the Patriot Act, but since 9/11, it's been used, and I think even abused. The way they use it is, I mean, it's a problem. In other words, if the idea of having a material witness traditionally was maybe you have ties to the mafia and it allows you to come in and the government to protect you, whereas, I mean, in my circumstances, I was arrested, you know, my name was flashed all over the media, then I was thrown into, you know, detention center, into jail, you know, amongst the general criminal population, I mean, those who have been arrested awaiting arraignment, trial, and you know, in shackles and chains, and didn't feel safe in that environment. And the idea that you're supposed to, the material witness statute is to protect the witness, you know, from harm, like if there's, you know, mafia hitmen and so forth, you know, it's an abuse of the statute, because, you know, in this country we should have due process of law. I mean, you know, even under the Fifth Amendment, you know, the last part of the Fifth Amendment says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's very important. And this is eroding our civil liberties when you allow the government to take somebody as a material witness and abuse the material witness statute in the way that they have been doing. Not just me. It's not just happening to me. It's happening to many others. In other words, the government doesn't have enough information to indict somebody, and they want to conduct their investigation, so they'll arrest somebody in the material witness statute while they'll use it in conjunction with the search warrant to gather all this information, and it's kind of a hit or miss. They have some suspicion, maybe they, you know, arrest you, gather information, and they can hold you in the meantime. I mean, I was fortunate in that I was you know, I am an attorney and I had, you know, competent legal representation. It was only 2 weeks. There's others who are languishing away for, you know, months or even years.
Like Padilla, 2 years
right.
without being charged. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, you're listening to Proverbial Perspectives. I'm Shahid Hamid. My guest today is Brandon Mayfield. And we're talking about his arrest, false arrest, and he's here along with his wife, Mona, and we will be continuing our discussion around these issues of Patriot Act and civil liberties, amongst other things. I'd like to bring Mona right back into the discussion just briefly, because you mentioned due process, and that, I think, many of us, I think, your arrest brought home, you know, brought closer to home to us the need for due process, the need for the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And I know while you were incarcerated, Moira and the rest of us was out, you know, and still dealing with the implications and the fallout from that. But Mona, the media, and this is something that my wife had discussed with me as well, in terms of every time they showed or talked about Brandon, they always showed pictures. In fact, my wife called Channel 6 because we really got upset that they would show media, they would show pictures of the bombing in Spain.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, and so just your whole feeling about how the media treated this story, this incident.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because during this whole entire time, I didn't want to watch anything. I didn't watch television. I didn't watch the media. I could barely, I just couldn't stand to see it, really. And you mentioned that. It's funny because Brandon's brother, Kent, had noticed that himself, because he would glue himself before the TV and try to catch every piece he could. And he's made the same comment you did. However, I just was not interested in seeing or reading anything about this at that time. I was more concerned about my children, trying to get my husband out of there, running, you know, to the attorney's office, taking care of business, so I didn't have time to watch the media. However, when Kent mentioned that, I believe he as well called several TV stations, and it upset him, you know, that they were always showing these horrible pictures, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and then bringing up the name, so.
I just wanted to add something
sure,
to that.
Sure.
The media... This is my circumstances were actually highly unusual. I mean, this whole thing was very unusual, mm-hmm. in that I was arrested, and you know, the FBI on May 6th files an affidavit in support of my arrest, saying they have 100% identification of my fingerprint to this bag. And then if you compare that to what they had filed on May 24th when they filed a motion to dismiss the grand jury proceedings, they're now saying the fingerprint that they've double checked on is of no value for identification. Mm-hmm. purposes linked to me. I mean, that's a big disconnect. But another thing that's interesting when you're talking about the media, it was a double-edged sword, because, I mean, like I said, you shouldn't be splashing this all over the place. If the idea is to have me come in and secretly, you know, talk about things and the grand jury could convene, when the media is all over this immediately. I mean, it's all over probably the world. And but the double-edged sword is that at the same time, you're hearing that the Spanish are having questions about this fingerprint. So... that's why I think some people from the very beginning were suspicious that there was something awry here.
Mm-hmm.
There was a disconnect there. So it actually, there was that aspect of the media reporting
had not,
that.
Had not the media just totally exposed your case, mm-hmm. then, you know, perhaps you still could be languishing in a sense.
That's probably true. I mean, I had about 900 calls, you know, throughout the ordeal. I mean, the phone was ringing just continuously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. And even, I mean, it's incredible, because it was under a gag order, so I didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have people from the media that would call me and, you know, something was leaked or they found out something, and they would actually keep me updated on to what is happening, because I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that.
We're pretty critical of the media, but we have to admit that there was some good investigative journalism going on there.
Yes, always by cable, too. You're listening to 90.7 FM Community Radio. I'm Shahid Hamid, along with my guest, Brandon Mayfield, and his wife, Mona. And we will be right back and take your phone calls here at 231 8187, 231-8187. So please give us a call, and we will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Proverbial Perspective. I am Shaheed Ahmed, and this is KBOO Community Diverse Radio. And my guest today, Brandon Mayfield, The Presumption of Guilt, along with his wonderful wife, Mona, and they're here to talk about their ordeal, their recent ordeal, for which he was released, or which he was acquitted. I can't say acquitted, because he was, didn't go to trial, but he was arrested, and held as a material witness for, I believe it was 10 to 14 days, what, about 10 days, Brandon?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay. So, if you'd like to make some comments about this particular case, well, Cable is here for you. 231-8187 is our number, and we're going to take some phone calls right now. Okay. You're on the air, KBOO. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on
here. Thank you very much. Mr. Mayfield, thank you for coming on to the show. And I just had a question because I've been following this story and in a couple of different publications locally, I think the Oregonian and the Portland Tribune. In a recent article in the Oregonian, I think it was just yesterday, it seemed like a bit of a protective article about the local FBI's efforts, they argued that there was absolutely no profiling in your arrest, that a computer actually targeted you. And yet, in another local publication, I think this was in the Portland Tribune, it was stated that nearly a dozen people matched the partial print, but only you were seized. So these are two very conflicting stories in two of the local journals. I was wanting to know if you could comment on this, and is there any way that you can independently investigate this when... And if I assume that you're going to be launching some kind of lawsuit on your own. And my phone is acting up, so I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It was my understanding that there was 20 people that matched, and I'm not quite sure where I was on that list. But I can answer your question. I mean, it's simple to say. I mean, if the FBI said I wasn't profiled, and I can't speak for them, but a lot of the pleadings that were originally under the protective order are now a matter of public record. There's nothing to hide. All you have to do is look at the affidavit in support of the search warrant and the arrest warrant. And of course, it did have the most damaging thing was this 100% match, which we later found out was not of any purpose or value for identification later. And so there was a disconnect there. But you know, virtually everything else in support of that in that affidavit in support of the arrest warrant for myself and the search of my home and my office was, I thought, you know, inflammatory, discriminatory. It had mentioned the fact that I had represented Jeffrey Battle, and that is true. I did represent him. There was no hiding that. I represented his son in a custody dispute. I mean, my purpose was to get his son, Esau Battle, into the care of a responsible relative. And there was other things in the affidavit that really had no bearing on, I didn't think, me as a material witness. I mean, for example, there was a paragraph or sentence saying the FBI had done surveillance and followed me to the local mosque.
And another one, actually, I remember, and I have to jump in here for this one. His wife is born in Egypt. I don't know what that has to do with anything, really.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that affidavit kind of speaks for itself in terms of if the fingerprint didn't match, then all this other stuff was superfluous, and it was all relating to me as a Muslim. I mean, it was talking about the fact that I knew somebody who was, you know, a Muslim or a criminal defendant. You know, this show is, I don't know, Shahid had mentioned it at the end, you're innocent until, presumed innocent until found guilty.
Actually, I hadn't seen the affidavit. I have to really jump in. I hadn't seen it at all until recently, until the gag order was released. And I just briefly skimmed through it. And, you know, personally, I think it's ridiculous. And when I ran into that paragraph, your wife was born in Egypt, okay, because they're talking about me, you know. I've virtually been here all my life. My family moved here when I was about 4 years old. And I was thinking, so what? I was born in Egypt. How many people in the United States are born elsewhere? Mm-hmm. And what does that have to do with anything? Mm-hmm. That upsets me, you know, mm-hmm. when I read that paragraph. What do they mean by that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just ridiculous things like that. And, you know, it's just incredible. I mean, if anyone wants to go, I mean, it's public record, a matter of public record, you can go take a look at it.
Yeah, just look at the affidavit, and you can draw your own conclusions.
It's funny because, as you mentioned, you know, we are a nation of immigrants, and many people can get to remember that. Thank you. Okay, and I'll take another call here. Thank you. KBOO, you're on air.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Shahid.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Can you turn down your radio?
I'll turn it off, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'd like to say assalamu alaikum to Brendan and to his wife.
Alaikum assalam.
This is Imam Shabazz calling. I'm thankful to Allah to see that you have been exonerated and released. This whole episode, I look at it in the light of even a bigger picture, the horror of being falsely accused, and how that plagues Muslims is starting to feel it now because of current events. I look at the African-American community and how many African-American males particularly have been incarcerated, accused, little or no evidence, and recently only DNA evidence of free people have been incarcerated for years on flimsy or no evidence, contrived evidence. So this whole methodology is not new. It has happened over and over and over again, and even with Joseph, seeing as you are a person of faith, understanding that Joseph in the Quran and Bible was falsely accused and in prison. And my question to you is, how has that impacted your faith as a Muslim?
Excellent question. Thank you, brother man.
You're welcome.
Absolutely, it's increased my faith. I've said to others, I mean, naturally, when the government, the federal government, puts its finger on you, you know, they can bring a lot of power to bear down on you, and it can be very overwhelming or oppressive. And so I'm just you know, as fearful I was of that situation, I'm more, you know, afraid of God. And so I did pray when I was incarcerated, and you know, it served to increase my faith. And you know, alhamdulillah, by, you know, thank God that I'm released.
Thank you, and thank you so much. Let's take another call. TV or radio, you're on the air.
Hello.
Please turn your radio down, sir.
Yes, I turned it down. Yes, I want the Maples to know that they have my complete support. My name is Jane McCoy, Hebrew member, American citizen. I was born in 1938, and in my lifetime, I have seen a pattern, I hate to say this about my own country, of signaling out various groups based on religion, race, national origin whatsoever for persecution. And in history of our country, unfortunately, this has gone on. The most recent one group to be singled out for persecution are people who are Muslims and or Arabic nationality. I have contacted my Congressman David Wu about this, expressing my concern to him, and he sent me a letter saying that it was a concern to him too, and he said that why this happens in our country is fear, and that's what's behind the whole thing. And he is pursuing legislation in the Congress at this time so that people of Muslim and Arabic origin will be protected from this sort of thing. If you look into history, go back to the Salem witch hunt.
Well, let's not go all the way back to Salem, but
we don't have to go through all that.
Okay.
But you know what I'm talking about. We don't have to go through all that stuff. But I think I've made my point already.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for your voter support. And I think that's great if he's proposing legislation that prevents any kind of discrimination. And it is true. I mean, we think that we're always advancing and learning, and we'd like to think that, you know, as a country where we've got beyond some of these discriminations of the past, that it seems like there's always this new bogeyman. If it wasn't, you know, if it's not the communists, then it's the Muslims. And you touched on something that's important, and it's this fear. And I think, you know, what's happening is out of fear. And it's interesting. I just barely got here in time for this radio interview. My wife and I, we were, you know, we live in the lower area. We were driving on 26, and we heard on the radio, we were just listening to the radio, and the traffic was backed up, and somebody called in and said, you know, what's going on? Why is, you know, what's backing up the traffic? Is there a bomb that went off? And I thought to myself, why do people automatically assume that there's a bomb going off? I mean, when's the last time a bomb went off on, you know, Highway 26 or anywhere in Oregon? I mean, it's more likely a meteor is going to, you know, hurtle down from Earth than a bomb's going to go off by terrorists. And yet we've been living in this this state of fear for the last 3 years almost, you know, since 9/11. That was a tragic event. And the Madrid, Spain bombing is, you know, horrendous. I mean, it touched me personally. I thought this is completely outrageous, you know, for somebody to do this. But we can't be living in a state of fear.
I mean, what's likely to happen? You know, an accident on Highway 26. I mean,
you know, that was one of the gists of one of the Oregonian pieces that that this whole incident, your whole incident, kind of brought out once again the whole issue of racial, as they call it, just mentioned racial, ethnic, religious profiling. And basically, as you mentioned, they, out of the 20 or so other people that fingerprint match, they looked at you, and within the affidavit, you know, you're a Muslim convert, your wife is Egyptian, I mean, these kinds of things. So, like you mentioned, it seems like we're always in this country on another case of some kind of profiling, some kind of discrimination, another law against discrimination, Well, I'm not going to discriminate against these phone calls right now. I'm just going to get one right now. KBOO, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My parents are Japanese American, and they spent 3 years, I guess, as being material witnesses or whatever during World War II. I mean, this has been going on a long time as far as putting folks behind bars, incarcerating people because of what they look like, what they believe. What I wanted to ask was in, I think, the Oregonian, they referenced that you had thought that you were subject to the sneak and peek kinds of invasions of your home. Could you speak about that?
Actually, I'm going to let my wife.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Actually, I'd like to comment on that. First of all, you know, you mentioned your parents were Japanese American. You know, the Japanese community has been very helpful, actually. You know, when 9/11 happened, the Japanese community actually, I believe it was several months later, they had a meeting with, you know, various people from the Muslim community and expressed concerns about where it was going to be heading. From experience, you know, the injustice that they had to endure for their times, and they were concerned, and so we'd like to thank them. Thank you. For the sneak and peek, I did suspect someone was in my home on two separate occasions. I generally don't lock my bolt, my top bolt of my home, and you know, I come home the first time, the bolt, it was bolted, and it was shocking. And I thought, well, you know, there's no way I could do this, but I had all these excuses in my head because I just couldn't believe why it would be bolted. Maybe I forgot, you know, all these issues were going on in my mind. And then exactly a week later, and, you know, you've got to understand that I was ultra aware of that at this point. It happened again. And my son, who is 15, I picked him up from school. We're heading home. I'd open the door normally like I normally would. Again, the bolt, it was bolted, so I gave my son the key and said, you know, go ahead and, you know, check it out yourself. And sure enough, you know, it was bolted. As we entered the house, our electronics were flashing, VCRs, you know, the clocks, everything was flashing. So I called, you know, PGE, and they had verified that it had been no outage. So it was just very suspect. And, you know, we'd even called the sheriff's department, you know, because we were just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I want to just maybe follow up on a question. Really, I just an issue touched upon by Imam Mikhail Shabazz, and of course, many of you know that he's involved with the Oregon Islamic Chaplains Association. And I wanted to ask you, Brandon, your treatment in the Mount Lemmon County Jail for 14 days. You know, a lot of times when people are arrested, particularly with respect to, you know, you did something in your country and so forth, a lot of people don't read and a lot of people don't care, you know, they automatically assume, and you're inside the general population. Were you fearful? What was your treatment like? What was, did it bring back any kind of visions of Abu Ghraib for you? Or how was that whole experience?
It was unpleasant, I mean, to say the least. It was an unpleasant experience. It was, I'm a big boy. I spent some time in the military. You know, it's disciplined and regimented, and being in jail is like that. I mean, it's obviously much more confining. That's not to be a play on words. But I actually thought that Multnomah County, you know, those guards and administrators at the Multnomah County Detention Center were, for the most part, and I was reserving judgment until I was out, were, you know, doing their job. I mean, they're just doing what they've been trained to do. And so, but still, because you're in a new environment, I was afraid. I was, you know, looking over my back, you know, watching my back. That's the perfect expression. That's the way I felt. You know, because you just don't know what to expect, where harm's going to come from. You don't know if it's going to come from a guard or another inmate, somebody who's incarcerated there with you. And there is, I'm sure, some dangerous criminals there. But again, I like to think that people are innocent until proven guilty. And, of course, they've been arrested on probable cause. So I'm not going to say that everybody in there is a hardened criminal. But it's not a pleasant place to be. And I was shackled and chained, you know, when I was moved from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
I use the term harrowing experience. And that's pretty much how you describe it.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Proverbial Perspectives. I'm Shaheed Ahmed. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm talking with Brandon Mayfield, a gentleman who was just released from custody after being falsely accused of his fingerprint on some bag in Spain. So I'm sure most of you are aware of Brandon and his story. And with him is his lovely wife, Mona. And we certainly want to thank them for coming down. We have a few moments left. Our number here is 231-8187. 231-8187 if you have a question or comment. How are you trying to, now that this whole ordeal is somewhat behind you, how are you trying to put your life back together, and will it ever be back together? Mona, do you think, and that probably is a question for both of you.
It's never going to be the same, I don't think. I don't think my life will ever be the same. In fact, my little boy today, 10-year-old, he had mentioned, he'd been mentioning this throughout this whole ordeal. He'd say, "Mom, you know, I just want it to go back to normal. When is it ever going to go back to normal?" And I'm afraid to tell him that it's never going to be normal, you know? I don't feel like I'm ever going to be normal. It's just changed my life, actually. Changed my way of thinking, changed my life. Schedule. It has certainly created a lot of work for us, especially, you know, at the office. So, mm-hmm. You know, putting it back together.
Yeah, you have to realize that I'm a solo practitioner. That is, I have a small office in on the West Slope in Portland, and I've been banging away to trying to make that thing work. And you know, I take modest means program. That is, you know, clients that have a lower income, and so you don't get rich doing that. And Mona was my legal assistant there. So when this happened, it completely destroyed our means to support herself, and that was extremely scary. When I was arrested, I was extremely worried about what's going to happen to my family and how are we going to continue to survive. And it just completely blew my, you know, law practice out of the water. I mean, we're just now trying to get back an inventory material that was taken and seized by the, you know, the FBI, and some of it's coming back in pieces, and they didn't go to great lengths to organize it. It was kind of, you know, here and there, and now I have to go back and put it back together. Mm-hmm. And we lost some clients, you know, some retainers, legal retainers, as a result of this. And there'll always be that taint. I mean, you know, it's just really difficult.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine so. We have time for just a couple of quick phone calls, and then your questions or comments. Here, 231-8187. Kay Boo, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I just really wanted to say to Mr. and Mrs. Mayfield how terribly sorry I am that this was done to them in the name of the rest of us, the American people. And I'm very, very glad that he's been released, and I have kept them in my prayers. And that I really respect their courage in speaking out, because things like this can only happen in the dark.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Okay. Cable, you're on the air. Question or comment? Cable, you're on the air. Yeah. Question or comment? Turn your radio down, please.
There we go. That was quick. Yeah. I just want to tell Mr. Mayfield, as far as I'm concerned, this is probably just payback by the government for the fact that he represented the Portland, one or more of the Portland Seven. That's the only way that I can see it. It's to keep people like him from supporting or helping support individuals that are being singled out by the government.
Thank you.
That's my opinion.
Thank you. You know, that's something that had occurred to many of us, that perhaps this whole charade, if you want to call it that, was sending a message out to all Muslims or in the Portland area or just Muslims in general.
I don't know. It's a chilling thought.
Yeah.
I've even said if that's the purpose, I don't know. I mean, imagine the chilling effect it has on clients, you know, or attorneys who are helping clients, or clients who are going to an attorney.
Well, one of the reasons why I say that, look at the similarities between your arrest and the arrest of Muhammad Abdul Rahman Fourier,
mm-hmm.
in terms of at the airport, media, big media frenzy, found some powder in his bag that later turned out to be, I guess, baking soda or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with you, this media thing. We found this guy who, in Portland, who haven't been out of the country in 10 years, and he's been over in Spain, and his fingerprints in Spain, this big bombing and so forth. You know, I mean, it's like your wife said, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we just don't have to keep being afraid. I think that's kind of the message that needs to be put out.
Yeah, absolutely. One or two more calls. Cable, you're on the air.
Hi. I also really admire and respect your composure and your apparent lack of bitterness around this. And
your radio.
Excuse me?
Your radio is giving us feedback here.
Sorry. Okay, here, I'll turn it. Is that better?
Yeah.
That's better, thanks.
Okay. I'm also very sorry this happened to you and your family. I think it's probably payback as well. As a political activist, I've been arrested before for no reason at all, and attorneys representing us have always encouraged us to pursue civil suits as a way of sending a strong message that the police and the officials need to be really careful about doing things like this. And, of course, what happened to you is far more serious than anything I've experienced, but I don't know what your plans are in that respect, but I really hope that you might consider that a civil suit of some kind, and not for personal gain, but just as a way to show that, you know, this can't just be done and there are no repercussions. But mostly I really just wanted to say that I'm glad that this seems to be somewhat resolving itself, and I wish you all really well. And thanks very much for having the show, Shahid.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that this gentleman said, then we're going to kind of wrap it here for a moment, but one of the things that this gentleman said is the lack of bitterness that Brandon is showing, and he appreciates that and the calmness with which him and his wife is experiencing this ordeal. And I guess that's one of the reasons why many of us who know Brandon just knew how ridiculous this charge was from the very, very beginning. As his wife said, many of us, you know, knew that the kind of person that he is and the kind of person that he presents and just the way that he helps people, that he could never be involved in something like this. And we're just certainly glad that, he prevailed and that justice prevailed and ultimately and our system of government prevailed in the sense of allowing this man to be with us today, not charged with anything. So we say good morning. Thank you. Thank everyone for that. And I want to thank you, Brandon and Mama, for taking time out of your schedule to come down to this program today. And hopefully sometime in the future we can maybe do a follow-up program just to see how things are going. And if you ever need a forum, Cable is always here, as it was here for you in 1991.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you, too. And please stay tuned here at KBOO, because we're always in making an effort to highlight what's going on and what we need to do as a community, what we need to do as a nation. I'm Shahid Hamid for Proverbial Perspective. Until next time, peace and assalamu alaikum. That is peace be unto you.